All right, so now you are on speakerphone.
Okay. So the role I know that Liz Matney played at DHS was one oversight. You're correct, Lori. It was she mainly was the person who delivered the data. It was, you know, most of her reports back to our oversight committee were very heavily data-borne and analytical. What I kept asking, you know, Liz in the meetings was about really deliverable. So are the MCOs delivering what they're supposed to be delivering? And is it of quality? You know, is it of quality service? Are we saving money? And sometimes with all that data, you know, Liz would gather a lot of it, and there would be pages and pages. We'd be awash in data, but it didn't always tell the story of, is this actually working? Are patients, getting better outcomes, and are we saving money? So even though, you know, she would be very diligent about, you know, addressing any kind of numbers that we wanted to see, the numbers that we truly wanted to see were the two big questions of why Terry Branch had said we were moving into a managed care system to include, you know, to improve the quality of service and to save money. And really, none of those numbers ever showed that, I don't believe. You could string some of her data together and draw some conclusions. And the very first oversight committee that we had with the MCOs, I just asked a very simple question. At what point will we know this is working? With all the data that the MCOs produced, not only for the state of Iowa, but all the data to the rest of the nation, you know, wherever they work in different states, you know, and they can tell. I mean, they have data gurus in the managed care insurance business, and they're able to see, you know, where their tipping point is, you know, at what point they need to pull out of the state, or at what point they need to change reimbursements, or at what point they need to recategorize patients. And so why would they be able to answer an easy question like, how do we know it's working? At what point will we know this is working? And what does working look like? And what does success look like in a system? But I think I just got stares back. And I did get stares back from Liz with that, you know. She would say, well, they're answering their calls in this amount of time, and they're able to, you know, come to some conclusions with some case management with this. Or, you know, we were able to, this many clean claims went through. And, well, okay, we've got all of that. That's great. Good to see that the machine is moving along. But really, globally, universally, how are we improving the system that we left from fee-for-service to managed care? How are we improving that? And I never really got an answer.
Just to clarify, when you say the oversight committee, this was a joint House and Senate oversight committee, or was this specifically just a Senate committee?
No, it was the joint committee.
Okay.
So when the oversight committee first started, Amanda Reagan and Dave Keaton were the chairs of it because Democrats led the Senate.
Right.
And then when we lost seats in 16 and lost the majority, then we were, then we had one member taken off, and so it was Amanda Reagan and myself, and it was Bill Volcom, but then it was Joel Fry and Mark Costello who were the co-chairs, and that first year in 17, we called for meetings, you know, out of session, we called for meetings. No meeting scheduled until you know, the end of the year. So it was, you know, we had a meeting like right before we went back to legislative session into the 18 session, you know, and then we had just sporadic conversations over it, but nothing really as uniform as we had hoped. And so then even last year in 18, going into 19 session, we had two meetings, and one was in November and one was in December, you know. And
so you met the whole year of 2018, this committee met twice?
Yeah, out of session. Generally, the thought is that it's supposed to meet at least three, two, possibly four times, if needed, out of session. So within session, you know, the Appropriations Committee or the Policy Committee in either the Senate or the House can also meet and can also ask DHS and IME to come and testify. So there's no reason why, you know, it's called the, you know, the HHS policy, you know, it's called human resources, but really I call it HHS policy in both the Senate and the House. There's no reason why you couldn't have someone from IME or DHS come in and talk about, you know, the happenings around managed care. And likewise with the HHS Appropriations Committee that is made up of the Senate and the House, and it's Joel Fry leads that, and Mark Costello leads that. So, mm-hmm. You know, then the Oversight Committee is to be really, the looking at managed care outside of the session, really. You know, how mm-hmm. are we going along? And our expectation was that we would probably meet in July or August, and again in October when there's budget setting, because, you know, Chuck Palmer used to, you know, about in August or September, you know, when I would ask him about the budget, I'd say, what are you asking for? You know, because he and David Roeder and the governor and whoever else was forming the HHS budget to present, you know, as the legislative session began, you know, the governor's numbers, that process really starts in August and September, and then they present in October. So why not have an oversight meeting in October to see, okay, well, what did you ask for, you know, in terms of dollars? How will that affect reimbursement rates, and et cetera? And then to have another oversight meeting maybe in late November or early December so that we could get our ducks in a row to say, all right, this is what's coming. This is what's needed and necessary for a Medicaid patient. Can we compromise on certain issues around this to make it better, to make the managed care system better, or even function, mm-hmm. you know? Last year they were jammed together, one in November and one in December. And we heard testimony from two managed care leads, you know, in November and one in December. And it was just kind of the same old questions. You know, and we're getting the same data back. Oh, they're making this, and they're doing this, and they're, you know, so, and that's the issue with data, is that you can look at it and say, wow, oh, you know, this looks pretty good, but then how are you going to use it? Like, I kept asking them, so Magellan was here, you know, and you have all that data from Magellan, from behavioral and mental health care, you know, work in the state of Iowa since the late 80s, early 90s. Are you using that? Did you use any of that data to formulate your mechanics or to formulate the system for managed care in the state of Iowa? Dead silence.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. And they do have that data. So how does that work? You know, how does that work? So, you know, data can be very, very useful, and the analytics can be very useful. In terms of, you know, they had Milliman as a, you know, writing kind of a prospectus on what managed care would look like in the state of Iowa and what prescription costs might be, how much, you know, that would take a chunk out of taxpayer dollars, how much, you know, the cost of service would be to providers, et cetera. You know, they Milliman used data.
Mm-hmm.
They got it from somewhere. So did they get it from other states? Did they get it from, you know, the Magellan numbers? Did they use their own numbers? You know, but then how does that unfurl? What does that look like when you put it into practice? So in terms of Liz Matney doing that, she delivered numbers to us. She always got back to us on what it was that we needed and what was necessary. But in answering, is this system better because of managed care, and are we saving money? I didn't get the answers that I wanted.
When I found some clippings that mentioned Liz Matney within the last 2 years or so, and for instance, there was a reference to that she was going to focus on how many case managers or caseworkers the MCOs had? I mean, did, with her position, did she have the authority to tell the MCOs, you need to have a better ratio of case managers to enrollees? Or I'm not clear on exactly what her job responsibilities were.
Well, I always looked at her as kind of the structure of, you know, how, you know, Jerry Foxman was at the top, and then you had Rick Schultz and Wendy Rittman and some of the people right under him. I looked at Liz as being that kind of person that was right there, in a, you know, like a, if the IME director is at the top, then she was that next step, you know, down on mm-hmm. the hierarchy. And that she was... He was supporting the directors, both DHS and IME, but he was in charge of really the overall statistics and data in regards to the managed care performance and their deliverables.
There was an issue that came up a year or two ago, and you gave a speech on the Senate floor about the governor's office was touting fewer hospitalizations, and you were saying that the MCOs were manipulating the data because in some cases when people went to the emergency room, that wasn't being tagged, it wasn't being marked down as a hospitalization, and so they were able to reimburse at a lower rate for it.
Yes, or not at all.
Right, or not at all. So
they wouldn't call it admission, they'd call it
mm-hmm.
So the governor said, look at these numbers. You know, look at the numbers of admissions are down. And he was touting it, saying, you know, it's working. No, that was a managed care policy that if somebody walked into the ER, in order to even be able to consider that you'd get reimbursement, you had to put them on observation until the authorization was confirmed that you could admit them. So here were a lot of the hospitals, including Unity Point here in Cedar Rapids, and Mercy Medical Center was the group that told me, you know, this is what's happening here. We'll put a patient on observation, and we'll treat that patient for 2 or 3 days. In fact, we'll admit them because they came in through the ER, and maybe it was, you know, an emergent issue, and maybe it was not. Maybe they came in through the ER, and they're waiting for admission, and after maybe 2 or 3 days, the managed care companies were saying, no, we're not going to pay you for it, and this should be, you know, an outpatient procedure, or... Well, then it's too late to recoup your costs, right? Because you're waiting for them. You're waiting for them to authorize payment. And at the same time, here's the patient. And the patient's coming in through your ER. What are you supposed to do? You know? And that was at the very beginning. Now they may have straightened some of that out. But that was what was happening, you know, within that first year.
And is that kind of coding issue something that the oversight director within Iowa Medicaid could have addressed? Again, I'm just trying to get at what her job title was, director of MCO oversight. I'm just trying to figure out, like, is that the kind of situation where that she or the Medicaid director could have gone to the MCOs and said, this needs to be fixed?
Well, I think, Gloria, I don't know. I don't know exactly what the answer is around that, but I am certain that she would be, she would contribute to the conversation around that. I'm sure she has been in conversation about that, because she seems to be very knowledgeable about managed care. I mean, when the first time that we met her and she sat down, I'm a data geek, you know, so I do like data. Mm-hmm. I do like to see what happens when you analyze data and you make it work, you know. So that's the step that we were still missing. But, you know, at least on our side. Maybe they thought that they were making it work on the DHS and IME side, but I didn't see that. I didn't see things that made me feel confident in it. So anyway, I'm sure she was, I think she was probably in on conversations where they talked about contractual obligation, you know, certainly because if it's a Brown performance, she would be involved in that.
Yeah, her LinkedIn profile says that she was involved with the negotiations, the contract negotiations, so
yeah.
It must have been
part of it. I'm sure she was at the table. She and Mickey, you know, probably were as well, you know, and Jerry, and very definitely Mike Randall.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, thank you so much. This is helpful. Is there anything I didn't ask that I should know?
No, I think you brought up an interesting question was what will Paige Thorson do, you know? So if Liz is coming in specifically for health policy, it sounds like maybe Paige is going to be involved in health policy, but maybe some other, maybe overseeing or something. I don't know if Paige is going to stay or if she's going. Or
well, yeah, they haven't answered that question. It looks like, as far as I can tell from her profile, she's staying on as the deputy chief of staff, but it's hard to tell, and they won't answer the question. That was, I mean, one of the reasons I was asking is because they said they needed new money for a health policy analyst. Well, they already had a health policy analyst in Paige Thorson. So if they were just replacing her, they wouldn't need new money. If she's staying on in some different capacity and they're bringing on Liz Matney, then, you know, then in that case, if that was the plan, then it would make sense that they needed new funding for that. They still haven't told me anything about anyone working on tax policy, so.
Well, Lori, I think from the very beginning, they need someone who is knowledgeable about managed care. They really do, because they started out really, Michael Busolo, you know, helped write part of the RFP, and I'm thinking, all right, he's got his master's, he's got his MBA and his law degree, but it really takes someone who is very focused on healthcare or the future of healthcare and has studied that, you know, more of a almost as a hospital administrator, someone who has been very involved in healthcare process and policy. And because this is deep, it's very, very deep, and the governor's office needs to be up to speed on all of this in order for them to help lead this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think for the governor, she's making a strategic move, bringing Liz over into the office of the governor and saying this is where we need to be leading part of this, you know, and at least being knowledgeable about what would be happening over at the NDHS, so that Liz could give the governor some good advice or, you know, or leadership
mm-hmm.
advice on it.
Okay, thanks so much. Hang on now, I'm